Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, Vachon and Pacific Northwest and all of our listeners in parts unknown. I'm Lynn Kerrigan. I'm your host today of The Brown Briefly. That was the voice of our founder and mentor, Brian Brown, who has now been gone from us for 2 years, having been a writer for the Time Magazine, Education, and other departments, and he has founded a radio program that, to us, kind of embodies the goal of talk radio, which is to have thoughtful, ethical, interesting conversation about the issues of the day. We hope you enjoy the show, and I'm going to start just by stating that I'm really proud to be a faithful follower of Martin Luther King and celebrated his day yesterday. I was really pleased to see so much of news about Martin Luther King in the paper, and find it very ironic that one of the other things we're going to talk about today is the voting rights bill and the systems in this country that are kind of under challenge right now, and that we need to think about what Martin Luther King said and what he modeled for us in terms of nonviolence. I think that one of the quotes I'll start with of his today before I get to our team in the studio is, "For the good of America, it is necessary to refute the idea that the dominant ideology in our country, even today, is freedom and equality, while racism is just an occasional departure from the norm on the part of a few bigoted extremists." I think we're seeing a lot of extremists and extreme actions and beliefs right now, and hope that we can use some of his models of nonviolence to find ways to come together. I'll say some more about this later in the show. But for now, I want to welcome our team, who is coming to us through the magic of Zoom, and I am welcoming Gail Kellner, author and poet, who's going to give us, at the end of the show, her lovely poem for the new year that was published in the Beachcomber this week. Good morning, Gail, and how are you?
Oh, you're muted, girl. Hang on. There we go. Sorry.
Good morning, everyone. I'm doing well. Thank you. I am very pleased this week as I went out walking in the forest to find that the nettles have begun to spring up. And so those of us who are foragers in the forest, nettles are one of the first early, really late winter crops that you can crop. Maybe not crop is the wrong word, because it's
harvest.
It's a delight that one can find in the forest. It makes wonderful tea and pasta. It can be eaten with wonderful effects for reinvigorating the body after the winter. So
thank you, Gail. Your naturalist observations are always so calming to me and welcoming. Let me also welcome Truman O'Brien, our pilot of the skies, who's here in the studio at the Sunrise Studio, because we're still having some transmission problems from the downtown Vachon studio. Truman, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I've been meeting with the tech team, and we have a plan.
Oh, good.
This Friday, we're installing three new radios on our tower here at Sunrise Ridge, and hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, we'll be back in JBBS, the Gene Bosch broadcast studio in downtown Vachon next week. We hope.
Installing three new radios on our tower. Yeah. Is that what they're called, those transmissions?
Well, they're microwave radios. They transmit the signal back and forth between Sunrise Ridge and the Gene Bosch studio downtown.
So, well done. You need to have our Most Valuable Player Award.
Oh, no, no. I'm just the organizer. The guys that are doing the work are the real heroes, those guys. And they figure out how to do it, and I just kind of schedule stuff, you know. You but they're amazing.
Well, I really
appreciate their work.
Appreciate you're keeping us going no matter what. Also in the studio is Bruce Hallman, who is working, who's our historian and guardian of the galaxy, and he is also in the Beachcomber this last week because he's been working with Kevin Jones to speak to indivisible Vashon on democracy in America. And Bruce, I wonder if you'd correct me or clarify what that's about and fill us in a little bit, and then Kevin, you'll follow.
Sure. Yeah, it may be invisible Vashon.
Sorry.
Trying to make sure that it's not. It's not so much a talk as a conversation with between Kevin and I. So just about sort of what America is confronting right now, and maybe best for Kevin to pick it up, and since he's a sort of major domo behind this whole thing. So, Kevin, let me pass it off to you.
Kevin Jones.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think he mentioned the 19th, 7 p.m., indivisiblevashon.org's website. You can go ahead and register to hear not only the discussion between Bruce and I, but also your questions of Bruce. Because on the radio, you can listen to what we have to say. But as Truman will know, during a Zoom meeting, you have full duplex opportunity to engage with Bruce and ask him your questions. So I think the general theme is around, you know, what do we see in our democracy that's encouraging? What are some of the more discouraging aspects of what we're seeing right now? And kind of what does this tell us about where we are, where our democracy is now on the arc of history of democracies that Bruce, of course, has tremendous experience with? And then where might that suggest that we, what might lie ahead? And while we don't have a crystal ball, we're not prognosticators, history may tell us some lessons about what are the possibilities that we might want to be aware of and consider as things move forward. So I hope our listeners will have a chance to join in. And oh, by the way, we have a pet parade. There are prizes. So bring your pet. If you can't bring your pet into your living room, you can email me your pet's photo with your pet name and your name to kevin@indivisiblevashon.org, and you will be entered in the pet parade for the prizes. So come for the history, stay for the enjoyment of pet parade.
So, Kevin, this is a Zoom meeting, right? Could you tell people how to register, please?
Yep, indivisiblevashon.org. Go to our website. Up at the very top of the homepage is a link to our January 2022 meeting. And when you click on that, it's up in the banner at the very top of the page, you will arrive at a page that has a photograph from Terry Donnelly of Guardian of the Galaxy, Bruce Hallman on Vashon. And right above that is a link to pre-register for the Zoom meeting, at which time you will receive an email notification with the link to join the meeting.
That's great. Gail?
I was just going to add that I think that information is also in the Beachcomber this week.
Yes.
I found it there and registered, and I'm excited to spend, it's going to be an hour and a half together, right? Is that correct, Bruce?
Kevin and I will be on about 23 minutes. Kevin, isn't that right? So there's other indivisible Vashon things going on.
Okay.
And of course, pet parade.
Of course, the pet parade. I love that, yes, by the way. We need all the light and humor that we can find at this time of year and this time of
history. I had a good friend, Mary Liz Austin, who's a photographer here on the island, and she said, I ran into her at Cafe Luna, and she came up to me and she said, "I had the most interesting experience on the radio. I heard Jeff Hoyt reading this thing about Bruce Hallman talking about democracy and then a pet parade. And I was thinking like I was getting whipsawed back and forth."
It's so very Vashon.
And let's show each other our pets.
It's just so very Vachon.
Oh, Mary Lynn, I couldn't agree more. It just made me laugh when I saw that. Wonderful. Thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward so much, Bruce, to getting more time listening to you and to Kevin's conversation. And I just love that you add that bit of levity at the end of the pet parade. So thank you all.
Well, and thank you for Liz Shepherd and the staff, the crew at the Beachcomber. They're just fantastic about making people aware of what's going on. Yeah, front page, before below the fold, you'll find some information. Just to round out the day, we'll start off with the discussion with Bruce, 20 minutes or so, and then about 10 or 15 for questions and interaction with the audience. Then we'll dive into sort of a humorous perspective on where our democracy is. And then we'll go in and talk about what people can do to engage and be part of it, and take some actions that we'll hope, we believe will improve our democracy and, of course, our civic engagement. And then we'll turn it over to the pet parade, and we'll close with a song, which is a standard for us these days. So, yeah, look forward to folks who want to join us.
Truman.
Yeah, I just need to throw in that Bruce's portion is going to be broadcast live on Voice of Vachon as well.
Oh, cool.
So be sure and listen for that. You can tune into the voiceofvachon.org. And I think, I'm not sure if they're going to do it on YouTube as well. I'll find out about that. But it will be broadcast. So
that means it will be archived and available later as well.
Indeed. Yeah.
Excellent. Great. Thank you so much. Well, the other thing I wanted to ask y'all how y'all fared with was all the, weeks of snow and rain and mail delays and mudslides and floods and high tides on Vachon. I heard that KVI Beach just completely disappeared. I thought I'd ask y'all how y'all fared with this weather and whether you have any tips or anything for our listeners about, kind of surviving in the flood, in the deluge.
Okay. Well, I'll add in a little shout out to the Postal Service here on Vachon. Last Sunday, on Sunday, I saw them out delivering mail. They were, I think, playing catch up from the previous week. So I thought that was wonderful to see. And it's so important, I think, to support those institutions like the post office and our libraries and those things that keep running despite what happens, hopefully, despite what happens on a national level. And, if I was going to give advice to anyone, I'd say, when it's the dark and wet is getting to you, put on your rain boots, grab a wool hat and the warmest coat you have and head outside. And that, it never fails to lift my spirits to walk through the woods. And I've regularly been in the last few weeks monitoring what's happening down at Fern Cove and Shingle Mill Creek's rise. And it's been quite interesting to see the floodwaters there. And if you don't have access to the top, to the bottom of it, where you really see the river running, you can go in through the top and through the back there. There's an entrance off of the not too far off of Highway. What is it? 156th, I think, and behind the Vachon Care Center, and you can see the water beginning to gather and flow down the many ravines there, and where they then come together to make the to add their drops to the flow of Shingle Mill Creek.
Thank you. Anybody else?
One quick thing about Shingle Mill, Land Trust owns a lot of the property now that, and the Park District that is part of the flow. And several years ago, Vachon Forest Stewards were enlisted to bring in a number of stumps and logs to place in the creek in order to enhance the habitat for spawning salmon. So they have really done a job and bringing back the salmon to Shingle Mill.
Great. So we're so lucky here to have such attention to our landscape. Thank you, everybody. Kevin, Bruce, any thoughts or experiences during the deluge? Yeah, Kevin.
It's the port of Vachon where I live, I'm at the headwaters of Fisher Creek, which sounds it sort of more impressive sounding than the reality, right? The reality of headwaters is, you know, it's like a dry ditch in the summertime and there's, you know, sort of water starts running down it, you know, in the fall. But, you know, I was out quite late last night on last Friday, because we're seeking a leak in our well system. And so my job was to at 11 o'clock to go out and shut off all the water. And then again, at 6 in the morning to go and get the water restored and see if we'd lost any water from the water tanks. So I'm walking around at a pretty quiet time of day, and I'm certain that I'm hearing Fisher Creek gurgling and burbling and rushing in the background, because at this time, when we have this kind of rainfall, Fisher Creek becomes a torrent, and it's fairly loud. So it was too dark. I need to create a pathway so I can get down to see Fisher Creek at, you know, like 6 o'clock in the morning, and just enjoy the sound during this time of day. So I'm with you, Gail. Get on the boots, get the umbrella, grab the rain gear, get out in the weather, and it'll change your whole perspective.
It does. Bruce, anything to add?
No, not really. I mean, both of what Kevin and Gail said of it, just get out and experience it, and also just, you know, make sure you've got 3 or 4 days that you can survive on your own as sort of a test for the apocalypse that's coming. There's no need to get out of your house to go up to town if you have requisite supplies on hand.
Right.
And it doesn't mean you have to be a sort of bunker mentality. It's just, you know, living here, living in the Pacific Northwest, you need to be able to hunker down for 2 or 3 days, you know, because by the end of 3 days, you know, things open up again, and, you know, at least people are getting around. The other thing I found, and we have a very active NERO, Neighborhood Emergency Response Corps group in Ellisport, and it was a good test of what we've been developing, and just sort of checking on neighbors and sort of making sure everybody's safe, everybody is warm and dry and has food to eat, and so it's an important thing to make sure, I think, that you have what you need to survive, but you also are aware of your neighbors and you check in on them, and it just was a good test of how resilient we can be in these trying times.
Yeah, I agree. And I walked to my nearest neighbor, who is my snow neighbor. We tend to try to go skiing or something like that when it snows, so that after 3 days of feeling squirrely, I realized I had snowshoes that I had never used. I had bought a couple of years ago, and she and I had the exact same type of snowshoe and went out just around the Vashon Beach Loop Road and took some pictures that looked like we were on the mountain trails in the middle of nowhere and sent it out to our families. So it was a wonderful day, and it does change your perspective. It made me happy to do that. Truman.
Well, I suited up, got my rain gear on, and I trudged all the way out to the garbage can and got the garbage dumped. And I felt pretty proud of myself for making it all the way there without drowning. You know, so.
Exactly. Exactly. And yet we survived.
There you go.
It's been a wild week, hasn't it? I'm just thinking about the Russians massing on the Ukrainian border and the volcano erupting near Tonga, causing a lot of ash and a tsunami, you know, that's still being investigated today to see how they fared. And I heard people all here on the island got tsunami alerts.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention to mine. I was playing some music, but that just was incredible to me. And, you know, continuing supply chain delays and lots of Omicron cases, just, you know, quadrupling our positive rate on Vashon. And, you know, this was an especially dangerous variant for the unvaccinated. And I think what I've been thinking about is being host today was the focus that has turned nationally to the voting rights legislation that I believe they're addressing today nationally. And, you know, they're hoping for some kind of a progress here, because Build Back Better has just lacked all the support of the two key Democrats that keep kind of sinking our agenda. I like to call them dinos, Democrats in name only. But what I wanted to kind of get started with today, moving from the local scene is to the state scene, because I also read on Monday that Inslee and some supporting legislators are, and that's our Governor Inslee, to sponsor two bills to shore up free and fair elections in Washington state. There's a Senate Bill 5843 to make it a gross misdemeanor for elected officials or candidates to lie about election results if the lie leads to violence. Yeah, they can be fined up to $5,000 or up to or get up to 364 days of jail time. And then Senate Bill 5148 is being proposed to increase the criminal penalties for harassment of election workers, making that a Class C felony. So I think there's another bill that's in the works, maybe by Rebecca Saldana, from a Democrat from Seattle. They're looking at how states can expand their voting rights. And, you know, I think what was interesting to me in that article was it talks about the questions that Republicans and even the ACLU is asking about this legislation, citing, you know, that we need some kind of balance that's not really very clear between free speech and threats to the rule of law. And I just thought I'd ask the team here, you know, what are your opinions about this and your rationale here within our state about these possible new legislation? Don't all speak at once.
Well, I'll jump in for a minute. My sense is that free speech is not at this point endangered in our country. In fact, it seems to have gone off the rails. But I think truth telling and factual information is right now the underdog, if you will, and is the area that we need to shore up. And so I'm very much in support of these measures.
Thank you, Gail. That's a nice distinction between free speech and truth telling. Kevin.
Yeah, you know, I've pursued this question with some attorneys, not formally, but just to say, did you hear what he said? And how many people are going to be, you know, mobilized to violence and possible, hopefully not death, but clearly people have had that objective in terms of some of the motivations that have occurred. And it happens on progressive as well as conservative rhetoric, in the case of Vashon, just what, a year and a half ago or so, a person on Vashon took violent action at the Northwest Detention Center and lost his life as it's in that action. I do not know what motivated this person or what he was listening to or how that occurred, but we know that there's a linkage there. And so the question I posed was, where's the line? And the answer I got was, that's a really good question. So, I think that legislation is a way to clarify the line. Interestingly, in talking with one of our state Supreme Court justices a couple of years ago, maybe a few years ago now, I asked, so when legislation is filed, new bills are filed, do you weigh in on their legality? And they said, well, no, we really don't. I mean, just imagine how much time we'd have to devote, to looking at the legality of a piece of legislation. There's certainly advisors and a lot of lawyers who are legislators, but, we pretty much, the bills that pass, if there's a lawsuit, then it comes to us and we'll sort it out. So it's kind of interesting where this might all go, but I champion Inslee for addressing the issue, which right now is a pretty vague part of our statute from what I can gather.
Yeah. I think it's bold to kind of put it right out there, in front of people and ask people to weigh in and think about this, because I think, I read that 43% of Republicans still believe that the election was stolen from them. And in the face of, no evidence of that. And
I think it's 40% of the total country,
like,
and 70% or more of Republicans is the last I heard. But it's amazingly high. I'm just shocked, along with you, Lynn.
Yeah, it's a surprising statistic. And, you know, I don't know where we go with this and unless we start tackling, you know, some consequences about it.
You know, Truman. My concern always, I mean, free speech is such a huge part of our culture that that anything that curtails it is, you know, it's the old slippery slope. I think we really have to be careful. And maybe the solution is that any speech that leads to violence, you know, or maybe that's a way to address it. Or any speech that endangers, you know, people's lives somehow, you know, that's the old yelling fire in a crowded,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. But boy, I'm very nervous about that.
Yeah, and that's what Inslee's bill does. It says it's applicable only if violence follows what's being said. So it's sort of along that line of the difference between if. Bruce, help me with this, the difference between insurrection and sedition, because I think there's incitement to violence, which is the speech that somebody may have the right to say. But on the other hand, sedition is when I think it's the actions undertaken by the insurrectionists, let's say, that are, you know, by violent means trying to overthrow the government. Is that not the correct distinction, Bruce?
Yeah, I think it is, but what it really comes down to is the question of prior restraint, you know, and sort of like everybody has the right to say anything they want, basically, and I think we need to stand strong on that, but there needs to be consequences if what you say results in violence or results in, you know, insurrection or sedition or whatever. You know, it's the results of the speech, the actions that follow the speech that becomes, I think, legislatively you can address. You certainly don't want to get to the point where you address prior restraint and sort of saying, hey, in I think where the ACLU and other free speech advocates worry about legislation like this is how does it leak over into that sense of prior restraint? You know, in effect, what it's trying to do, this legislation is trying to restrain what people say based on the consequences they may face after they say whatever they say. And that's the dilemma they think that free speech advocates confront is, if your speech results in violence, then, you know, the fire in a theater kind of thing, you know, then there's a path for prosecution.
Right.
But what if that speech, what if somebody yells fire in a theater and a panic results, but nobody's injured? You know, that's the dilemma that lawyers, I think, are trying to balance. And it's very difficult and it's not a clear line. And I think that's why you get this free speech advocates sort of feeling very nervous. And Danny Westhut, I think.
Westneat. Westneat. His name is Westneat. N-E-A-T. Westneat. Go ahead.
Yeah. I had a wonderful sort of opinion piece on this and sort of like, yeah, at what point can we constrain others until after an action takes place? I don't have a simple answer for it, but I think we're all concerned about authoritarians on either the left or the right deciding what can and cannot be said in public.
Yes, I'm just grateful it's in the public forum now and that we're having some dialogue about it, which to me is that sort of in the change theory model. All of the contemplation and the beginning dialogues are as important as the end result because we have to do a sea change of understanding and agreement about, you know, where the lines are to some degree. Gail.
I'm just curious what all of you think about things like the Consumer Protection Act, which prohibit lying to the public when it comes to consumer products. So truth in advertising, you know, those kind of precedents to me could be used to set expectations, particularly for politicians. I think also we have libel laws, you know, where you can't just say anything you want about anybody with no consequence to that. And I think libel laws is another place where we could look, where we're held to a standard of truth when we talk about one another. What are your thoughts, everyone?
You know, the one thing that always bothers me is that we say, well, as long as you're speaking the truth, you know, but the question is, who's determining what's true and what's not? You know, that's always the question for me. So somebody says, well, this is the way things are. Well, who says that's the way things are? You know, it's a really, really difficult question.
Kevin.
Yeah, it is. And it's really a product of the
kind of postmodernism, all that deconstruction of absolutism.
Yeah, right. But it's that sense of truth is a malleable thing, you know, and I mean, cultures, you know, often determine what's true rather than, you know, scientific facts. And it is a difficult territory to walk through. And we really are that end result of that product of beginning to sort of question any authority. And I think that's what Trump, sort of the genius of Trump, if you will, is he sort of recognized that sort of fundamental unsettling was taking place in American society and around the world. And he and other authoritarians around the world have tapped into it, because what is true? And you know, I mean, there's it's difficult to pin down what truth is outside of a cultural context.
Kevin.
You know, this was the primary concern of our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, right? 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when he was on Vashon. And in a more recent town hall with him, which is maybe less than a year ago, he said this is still his primary concern, is, you know, how do you define truth? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me how we can be, how the forces of propaganda can so effectively, you know, divide people. And it's almost, in my mind, just very frightening about how effective it is. And of course, propaganda has been an instrument of governments for, you know, over 100 years now, probably quite well and developed. Certainly we hear stories from the Nazi Germany and how effective they were in applying it. The thing that really strikes me, for example, is, you know, people are, so many people care about the state of our democracy. I think it was something along the lines of, you know, 60% of Americans think our democracy is headed for dissolution. The thing that was really intriguing to me is hearing on the anniversary of the insurrection on January 6th, a person walking to the Capitol was being interviewed and said that, geez, our last free and fair election was in 2016 when Donald Trump was elected. And I care about our democracy. So we all care about our democracy. And we are now pitting ourselves against each other in defense of our democracy. So the banner of democracy doesn't mean the same thing in any stretch, right, to many people in the country. And I don't know how to cure that, but I think that's a source of division that needs to be addressed.
One of the things that I think about, Kevin, and I think, you know, we're all giving very kind of thoughtful and reasoned sort of open, you know, open to dialogue and open to thinking newly, because what we're doing right now isn't working very well. And this is kind of what sent me to the theme of sort of Martin Luther King and his contributions to our country back in the 60s, because I was, you know, in Atlanta at that point. I'm just thinking how much he used nonviolent principles to just visually showcase what happened when they protested when blacks protested the segregation laws And, you know, to watch the fire hoses be turned on women and children because they wanted to eat at a restaurant or because they wanted to peacefully assemble, to me was more educational and informational than any argument. You know, he really believed in nonviolence and in the power of showing up and sort of standing for what you think is right. And, you know, I was aware that when they did that, or I was reading about the march on that Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, in support of voting rights in Alabama, only 2% of blacks were registered to vote in Alabama or in Selma at that time. And it was a shocking visual to see that very rational plea about inclusion in our democracy to be met with such brutality. And I think that sometimes we don't solve things out of logic. We solve things out of just this process of standing for our truth and seeing what extremes people can go to support their opinion, and some of which kind of is unconscionable. So, you know, it reminds me a lot of the, what is it, an analogy about truth that is the elephant. You know, if somebody touches this big trunk-like leg, it feels like a tree. And if somebody touches some movable trunk, it might feel like a snake. If somebody touches, you know, a big hide-bound belly that's as big as the room, it might feel like a cliffside. And it takes some perspective to stand back and realize that those are parts of the truth, but they're not the whole truth. And what do we need to get to the whole truth? And one of Martin Luther King's quotes was, "All we say to America is, be true to what you said on paper." You know, we have in our Constitution that we're believing that all people are created equal, and we're trying to morph through time to challenge those old Jim Crow laws to give people, you know, equal rights under the law, and it's a big change. So
let me suggest it's very interesting to go back and read Trump's first inaugural address, because there may be a second. And what he said, when you listen to it and contrast it to what Martin Luther King had to say, he said, and began his speech, "We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promises for all our people." Then he goes on and says, "Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning." This is his inauguration. "Because today we're not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C. and giving it back to you, the people."
What do you make of that, Bruce, as a statement of some kind of truth that's sort of beneath what he said?
Well, I think he's saying the same thing Martin Luther King's saying, basically, is that the power should be with the people. Now, his interpretation of who the people are
exactly
is very different than Martin Luther King's interpretation of who the people are. And if you sort of parse out, you know, what Trump says in the rest of his speech and what happens during his administration, what's happening today, it's very clear that what he means by the people is returning to a sort of new Jim Crow.
Right, exactly.
That sort of allows certain people to vote, but other people not to vote. And that's what we see happening in legislation around the country, in state legislation. And that's what the National Voting Rights Act is designed to prevent. So that's the struggle we see going on. But you ask earlier, you know, how can we see things so differently? You know, and Kevin was talking about, you know, what 40% of the American people think the election was stolen. You know, it's because of that sense that their voices are not being heard. And so, in a sense, what you're seeing right now is a new civil rights movement that's designed to limit rights for certain people and ensure rights for those who are part of that revolution. versus the Civil Rights Revolution of Martin Luther King, which was designed to get a group of people who had been excluded to be included.
Right.
This new Civil Rights Revolution is about excluding people. But the two come from the same kind of sentiment.
Well, let me take...
Interesting.
Hold on. I want to take this one step further, and I hope your comments are still going to be relevant, because I know the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill and the Freedom to Vote Act are before the Congress right now, that just support early voting and vote by mail and automatic voter registration and possible restoration of the United States Justice Department oversight over states' voting rules to prevent discrimination. And so it feels like, you know, the Democrats are kind of valiantly trying to keep included the progress, some of the progress that's been made around inclusion and African-Americans getting full rights. And yet it sounds like this bill is expected to fail. These bills are expected to fail today. And so I'm just throwing that out as more context for your comments. So Kevin and Gail and Truman, good, Kevin. Go ahead.
Thanks, Lynn. You know, it's an interesting, David Domke, who's formerly headed up the, I think, communications department at the University of Washington, is now investing a lot of his time in an organization called Common Power. And Common Power is focusing on, you know, how do we support election outcomes that we like, you know, voting for the candidates who share our values. He is talking a lot about where our democracy is headed and the risks and the challenges to voting and what can we do about it. And, you know, his outlook is not optimistic, you know, but where things are going, which probably is not surprising. He says that, you know, we need to engage. Now is the time to participate. I asked him, what do you think is going to ultimately change the trajectory that we are on? His response was another civil rights movement, essentially. And he named Reverend Raphael Warnock and Stacey Abrams, who hopefully will be Governor Stacey Abrams come November of this year. But that's what he saw. Now, of course, that's falling back on what was true, you know, 30, 40 years ago, or maybe more now. So maybe there's other outcomes, but I thought his response was interesting. And yeah, Perhaps that is something that we should be looking forward to creating as we go forward.
Well, I'm going to rocket ahead because we've got about 2 minutes left now. And I just want to say the brightest thought that I've heard recently is a potential Biden-Cheney, Liz Cheney slate for 2024. That was probably the most provocative thing I've seen in a long time, to think about really developing new and maybe unusual coalitions to kind of face what we're dealing with today. And I guess we can come back to that. You know, I think he was trying to make a metaphor with Israel's coalitions. But I'd like to give the chair to Gail for a minute to read her New Year's poem. And let's end the show kind of on that beautiful high note.
So this was written in the wee hours of the morning of 2022. It's called A New Year's Wish for 2022. The crescent moon sat just above the horizon, a golden cup, thin as my grandmother's best china. Spill over, I begged, looking out through the window of time. The world needs your abundant blessings in the year to come. Run over with kindness. Drip your golden honey light out on the least among us. Remember the poor, but remember the little creatures too. The clam waiting patiently for you to pull the tide in over the wet sand. The tiny single ladybug I found in my winter garden alone. The grebe with its slender neck floating on the night black waters. Ladle up all of us and hold us together long enough to forget our differences, remember our shared humanity. Shine on our best ideas, reflect our grandest hopes back to us. Pour your bright light out onto a troubled world. As for me, it is 3 a.m. dawn hours away yet. I'd like to bring my pillow and nestle in your perfect curve. Dream of peace and a green abundant future. Overdue justice and rest with you for a moment among the stars.
Thank you, Gail. And I will end with the words of Martin Luther King, who said, love is the greatest force in the universe, the heartbeat of the moral cosmos. Stay close to those who love.